This is Radio Boston. I'm Tiziana Deering, and it's Tea Day on Radio Boston. And MBTA General Manager Phil Ng is due to join us. He's on the tee, but he is not with us yet. And as we await him, we have two guests who are as interested as I am in what he has to say. Joining us here at the station, WBUR senior business reporter Zeninjor Enwemeka, and on the line, Joan Banaki, associate editor and columnist with the Boston Globe. Zeninjor, welcome.
Anna.
Hi there. I think we've got your mic there now.
Yeah.
There we go. And Joan Banaki, welcome to you too.
Good morning. Nice to be here.
It's great to have both of you. There's a lot to talk about today. The announcement of low-income fares from the MBTA board, this deal to sort of extend the deadline for orange and red line train cars with CRRC, the Chinese company that was scheduled to deliver them last September. We don't have them all yet. A number of other things, you know, the work in Blue Hill Ave that Boston Mayor Michelle Wu wants to do with buses. What strikes me, Zeninjor, is the fact that we are all waiting with bated breath to speak to the head of a transit system. And you've covered transit all over the place, including other countries. That seems a little unusual in and of itself.
There's a lot going on with transportation. And there's some interesting challenges that we've been facing here with the MBTA. Some interesting new you mentioned the Blue Hill Ave project. I mean, that's something that reminds me of some of the reporting I've done in other countries, where this is a $44 million project to completely redesign Blue Hill Avenue, with the key feature being this center-running bus lane, something called Bus Rapid Transit, which is a more efficient, faster, quicker bus system that's been used for years in many parts of the world. And we're seeing that really come to fruition, or potentially, you know, the plans are laid out for that to happen in a big way here.
So, Joan, I was going to turn to you for a thought, too, but actually the general manager is here. So I'm going to say thanks to both of you. We're going to come back to you later in the show for reactions. Zeninjor, thanks for that. And now you can hear him kind of walking into Studio 2 as we go here. In walks Phil Ng, who is the general manager of the MBTA. I'm going to have you put your headphones on and line up to the mic. Let's test your microphone, Phil. Thanks for coming in.
Well, thank you for having me. Good morning, everyone.
Good morning. Okay, you know I have to ask you, were you late because of the tea?
No, I was late because I got out of the office late. The tea was running on time, but yes, it was my own scheduling of my own meetings.
Okay, and I also am going to ask you, as somebody who ran something, when I asked you that and you were able to say, no, it wasn't because the tea was late, is that a very satisfying thing to be able to say at this stage, a year and a week into your leadership? A year minus a week into your leadership.
Well, we've done a tremendous amount of work over the last year. In fact, maybe more work than we've done in years before, people have told me. I'm proud of the amount of accomplishments that have gone on, but I'm also very aware that we have so much more to do. But I want people to know that we are doing so much day in and day out to provide the level of service that they deserve. More to come, and certainly a lot more work to be done, but we are improving for them.
Well, let's do this rapid fire, because I'm not going to talk to you at exactly a year, right? I have you 1 week early, but let's just rapid fire. The thing that you really do feel most proud of, just in a sentence, is X.
I think showing the public that we can start to deliver the results that we promised them. Each of these diversions that we accomplish, we are fulfilling our mission, fixing the track that we set out to do, albeit much more that we could do if we had more time. But we are delivering that. We're lifting the restrictions. We are focusing on improving the safety culture. And we're rebuilding our workforce as we rebuild our infrastructure. So these things that are first and foremost, that are paramount to safe, reliable service, the foundation is being built, and we're going to keep moving forward.
And the thing that you want to address and haven't yet, that most bothers you, that you haven't, it's not done yet.
Well, I think a lot of this is still tied to a longer term, the culture shift. Right, resetting expectations of ourselves, making ourselves more focused on how do we maximize the delivery of service, maximize the use of the dollars that are provided to us, and do it in a quicker time frame. Right, we need to be not only accountable to ourselves, accountable to the public, but it's showing in how we deliver things. We will continue to show improvement. We will continue to find areas where we needed to do better, and when we find them, we will do better moving forward. But that is a longer-term shift, because it's not only internal to us, it's how we work with our external partners. And I think that's just something everyone wishes could be overnight, but we know it can't be.
All right. You just talked about maximizing use of dollars and about the importance of accountability. So with that in mind, then where I want to go is CRRC, which I find this hard to say. I believe it's China Railway Rolling Stock Corporation. So we will go back to CRRC from here forward. You were supposed to have 404 new cars, orange and red, for about $871 million delivered by last September. And now you've had, only 130 cars from CRRC, now paying roughly another $150 million so that they can deliver them in 2027, which is 4 years late. Now, listen, this is nuanced, and I know that. So we'll pull that apart a little bit. I know it's complicated, but the obvious first question is whether you're really okay with that. I know you might have had to do it, but are you okay with it?
Yes, I wouldn't have done it if I was not okay with it. When we looked at all the different options that we had, right, first and foremost, we've been working on fixing track infrastructure. That investment is not going to be fully appreciated if we don't have good, reliable rolling stock. Had we not seen consistent delivery of the Orange Line cars and Red Line cars over the last, since October, we would be having a different conversation. But we have shown over the last year, we were able to get to a point where the reliability of the cars that we're receiving continues to remain high, which means our riders are seeing the benefits. Orange Line is the exact example of no longer are we using the old Orange Line fleet. But since October, we've had two married pairs per month delivered on a regular basis. And what we've had to do is deep dive into what were the issues. Some were self-inflicted in terms of startup workmanship early on on the things, but the other things that we identified as part of this resetting of the contract was things that were not a result of CRC, their subs, or the MBTA.
So that's like supply chain issues, COVID, the tariffs that were passed on Chinese companies during the Trump administration after the contract was signed. I'm assuming those kinds of things.
Absolutely.
All right, so two follow-up questions. One, is it normal in your industry to pay $150 million more for something to be 4 years later than they were supposed to deliver it? Is that normal? You might tell me it is, but I do want to know.
Well, I can say this. There's different ways we could have approached this, right? Industry procures certain rolling stock in a manner. And something that just recently came up.
Rolling stock is train cars?
Yes, train cars, buses. And we just had a meeting in D.C. recently with regards to bus manufacturing. And what the White House FTA acknowledges is that the industry, the way vehicles are procured, face different challenges. They predict the price, they estimate the price, and they don't get paid until the delivery of the vehicles. And what happens is that there are price escalations, inflation, things that happen. But
stuff
in this
gets
case,
more expensive.
But in this case, post-COVID, that inflation rate went through the roof. And then the bus side, what we've been asked to do is to take a look at advance payments, price adjustments, and that's exactly what we did here on the train rolling stock.
So are you saying it's normal now?
It is something looking forward. Now, in other parts of industry, I know in my previous jobs, for instance, in DOTs, there's steel price adjustments, there's asphalt price adjustments, things that as market fluctuates, whether up or down, the contracts has built in the ability to change prices. In this case, what we have is a way the projects are bid, the subs predict the prices of the materials when they deliver the materials. And what happens is either they estimate higher cost and we pay for it up front, or they estimate lower cost and perhaps there are losses. And
okay,
what we did here is we acknowledge that there are losses. A lot of that $148 million is tied to the sub-suppliers, the material supplies, the vendors that are crucial to CRC's success. And without those different components, it doesn't matter with every other part. If we miss one of those components, we don't have cars. And if we don't have cars, those red line cars, if I'm not mistaken, I would know, type ones may be some of the oldest in the country that are still running.
Yeah, they were definitely sort of past their useful life. All right, so one more question on this, then we'll take a pause, and then I want to talk low-income fares when we return.
Sure.
But in a minute or so, Understood on all of that. But about $50 million of this is essentially incentives to be on time this time around and forgiveness of penalties for not having been on time. That feels different. Why is that okay?
Well, there are penalties still that are being held. There's $37 million plus dollars of penalties that are still accrued that are not part of this. Yes, over the course of time, if they adhere to a schedule, the agency is willing to consider that as an incentive to deliver the rest. The new, moving forward, we do have incentives built into that $50 million that you talked about, but we also have liquidated damages going forward as well. So a lot of this is tied to acknowledging there were delays due to CRC and their production. Mm-hmm. Those LDs are still in place. Liquidated damage is still in place. But moving forward, what we are setting now is establishing how do we get the cars quicker, which we will. How do we continue to maintain the reliability, which is vital. And worst case scenario, had either party decided to go a different way, we know a new contract would have taken at least 6 years before we saw the first car come onto the road. And we have no guarantee of the quality of a new product until we have that all tested. And we also know that it would have costed over $1.2 billion at best.
You're listening to Radio Boston. And today, right now, here in Studio 2, we're talking with Phil Eng, General Manager of the MBTA. Thanks for staying with us. You know, over this last year, it's been almost a year now, you take the T a lot. I wonder, have you ever stepped off a train and stumbled on some little corner of Greater Boston that you didn't expect and that delighted you? Have you come across something that really surprised you stepping off a train car?
Well, wherever I step off, whether it's train car, the buses, the commuter rail, I think what surprises me, well, I shouldn't say surprises me, but really excites me is just seeing people's expressions and faces as they're visiting the city too, and as they're maneuvering the city for work. There's an energy with it. And I know that energy is vital to the economy and quality of life. And I just really feel good that I know what the T means to everybody. And it just highlights the importance of what we're doing and where we're trying to go to.
So I think you brew your own beer. Is that
I
right?
I do brew my own beer. And I'll drink my own beer that I brew. So
have you? How many batches have you brewed since you got here?
Well, I have to admit, I haven't brewed any batches since I got here because the equipment, my wife says, takes up too much room in our apartment. So,
oh, no.
But I do have all the equipment to do it still.
Okay, it feels like Boston should apologize to you for keeping you from your self-care since you've gotten here. We'll have to work on that.
I will brew a batch, though.
All right, so listen, I want to talk to you about this move. The MBTA board has voted to put low-income fares into place. For people who are make $30,000 a year or less, they're supposed to go into effect this summer. You are pretty charged up about this. You're pretty excited about this.
Absolutely. In fact, when I got here last year and I saw the $5 million that the governors and the legislature put into the budget for last year, that was an exciting point. I remember sitting down with the team and saying, you know, the $5 million talks about studying this. Let's find a way to implement this. And the team really dove deep down. They rolled up their sleeves and they came up with a program that we were able to go to the board and really appreciate the board's full support. And it's exciting because this is not only about allowing people who currently use this system to make it more affordable. But there are people out there that need to use this system and probably can't use it because of that. And low-income fares is going to be on every mode that we have. That's huge. So it's really exciting because, again, this is about people using mass transportation, making it a viable option, and hopefully the preferred option.
So the cost is what is expected to be $25 million in the first year, grow to about $50 or $60 million per year over the next 5 years. It's expected to enroll 62,000 riders and induce up to 88.1 million annual trips by fiscal year 2029. Is the goal to offset, right? It costs this much, but you get this many more trips, or is that not an equation you're interested in?
I think it's both, right? We do want people to be able to afford and use the system, the ones, again, that are currently using it, but we will see ridership increase. Obviously, the more ridership, some revenue, even be it at 50%, is important. But our goal is to make sure it's reliable, people feel safe, and that they know it's frequent enough to be able to use it. Those things we have worked through. Every year, we have to balance a budget. This was too important not to do.
So we live in complex systems, right? So climate affects, economy affects, jobs affects, affordability. It's a bundle. And one thing drives the next, drives the next. Of those issues, which one is sort of the first principal thing that a low-income fare solves? Is it affordability? Is it jobs? Is it mobility? What's the first principles thing?
I think it's fairness. It's allowing people the ability to take a system that others can do without thinking about. I remember riding the buses and seeing people counting the change, and it's really tough to see when it's that hard to be able to afford the fare. And the buses are reasonably priced, but I know that this discount means so much to people. It's about fairness, and it's about equity, and ultimately quality of life, because then the stresses that people have day to day, you know, we can take a little bit off of them.
There's something about your tone that just changed, and it makes it feel to me like somehow this speaks to you personally. Something about seeing people count those coins in their hands. Why does that speak to you so personally?
You know, because we're all humans. This is about treating people appropriately. But I think it gives people respect, and it gives people a sense of we're all equal. And we have to do our share as public servants. And that's why it's so exciting to do, and that's why it's so rewarding. And I also know why it's frustrating when we don't do what we commit to. And that's why it makes our job so much more important to keep pushing forward.
So it makes me want to then go to, and at the very top of the show, I was speaking with my colleague, Zenindra Nwemeka, who was talking about the $44 million investment along Blue Hill Avenue, right? The Blue Hill Ave corridor, buses there. About $11 million of that's going to come from the MBTA. Is that an invitation you accepted from Boston Mayor Michelle Wu, or an idea you drove to the city of Boston? I guess, pun intended, you know, which?
Well, I would say this idea was already in the works before I got here. But certainly the ability to improve bus service, make it more reliable. And not only will a center running bus lane make it more reliable and quicker trips, it will make it safer as well. The ability to separate buses from the regular traffic is safer for the buses, safer for regular traffic, safe for our riders. And ultimately, it will improve not only the people using the buses, it will improve businesses along those corridors. I've seen it in other areas where...
Like where?
I'll use the example in New York City. One of the very first pilots, and they were very concerned with a bus lane on 14th Street. A lot of opposition initially, ultimately moved forward. And after the pilot, it demonstrated the success of the ability to not only move people, but not impact the businesses and the quality of life along that corridor. And now that's expanded to show the ability to do more of those bus lanes. And I think that's the same thing here. We're not only trying to improve reliability of our system, but how do we fit in with everything else that we adjoin, the communities that we serve, the business that we serve, right? It's not just focused on one aspect. This is a multimodal system, and complete streets is in part important to that. So buses, whether it's walkability, the ability for vehicular traffic, and businesses to thrive, these all go together. And this is just one piece, but it's an important piece to move forward.
Is fairness sort of the governing principle we should have in place for a transit system?
Fairness in respect of, I think, equality and people being able to know that it's available to everyone. I don't know if that's the only component, but I think it's an important part. And it's hard because we serve such a diverse geography. We serve people that have different needs for the system. And sometimes you make a decision that's important for the system. It does impact people differently. In some cases, those improvements are dramatically good for them. In other cases, it alters someone else's where they might have to do something a little bit different. And change is not easy to accept. I think the real thing is about communication, allowing people to hear the pros and cons of things, and allowing people to give feedback. And that's how we can make an informed decision, but also people can understand those decisions that we make moving forward. It is about improving quality of life, and it's about making transportation a key part of it, because it's like air and water. Without it, everything doesn't thrive. And I really believe The ability to be mobile, the ability to get around and feel good about it, is why people choose to live and work and play in Massachusetts.
And it's both of those things, the ability to be mobile and get around and feel good about it.
Absolutely.
And both of those things animate you.
Oh, 100%.
We're here with MBTA General Manager Phil Ng, and the little bit of time we have left, I've been trying to figure out how to get my head around a money question, right? I mean, it's complex, it's hard. Let me ask you this one. So you've got $25 million in the first year for the low-income fares. You've got $150 million on the capital side for, to round out this contract with CRRC. You've got $11 million allocated for the Blue Hill Ave corridor. Money here, money there. That set of money, where is it coming from? Do you already have it? Because we know there's operating budget deficits coming.
Those projects, the dollars are set aside for that. The CRC money, we've gone through and we've taken a look at how to fund that. It's going to be funded with dollars that we have in the existing program and funded with dollars that are upcoming in this new program. But I want to assure everyone that the projects that are on moving forward are not affected by this. What we will see, and over time when I have a chance to dive into it more, is we're taking a hard look at how we use the dollars we have. And we need to make sure, as I think I opened up with, that we're using them wisely, that we're delivering results, and that we're managing the dollars to the most maximum effect that we can. And that is part of the culture shift. That's part of how we're taking a look at procedures and processes. But it is really important for us to take a look at how we hold ourselves accountable, maximizing, again, that every dollar that we use, taxpayer dollars, is put to the best use, and the results are shown when we're done.
And are we doing that now?
We are taking a hard look at our capital program going forward, and we are really making some difficult decisions. But we're going to progress not only state of good repair, keeping the system safe, but we are going to build for the future as well. That's some of the exciting part of how do we challenge ourselves to do both. And that does not mean sacrificing the things that have gotten us to where we are, maintenance, state of good repair, corrective repairs. They all have to be prioritized, but there's creative ways to deliver on future projects that are so important to future generations.
All right, getting back on the green line?
Absolutely.
MBTA General Manager Phil Ng here in Studio 2. Thanks for joining us. Appreciate your time.
Well, thank you for having me. Look forward to the next time.
You're listening to Radio Boston. I'm Tiziana Deering. Excuse me. And Zeninjor Enwemeka is over in Studio 2B. She is senior business reporter here at WBUR. And Joan Vanacki, who is associate editor and columnist at the Boston Globe, is on the line, both listening this hour to the conversation we just had here in Studio 2 with MBTA General Manager Phil Ng. Zeninjor, hey there.
Hey, Tiziana.
And Joan, thanks for being with us.
I am here.
So let's start with reactions to the conversation we had. And for listeners who may have come in partway through, we talked about a year into the job for him, the extension of the contract with CRRC for train cars, low-income fares, the Blue Hill Ave corridor investment, a number of things. And enjoy your reactions.
Yeah, it was interesting to hear the general manager address, particularly when you were asking about the red and orange line train car delays. You know, that's been a project that's been many years, several delays. And here we see, the extension where we're expecting, the cars now 2027. So, that's an interesting situation for the T. He did mention that, starting over, getting a new contract would take another 6 years. So can certainly appreciate that position of not wanting to start over and add six more years to all the delays that we've been seeing there. I'm interested to see moving forward how the T will address, other potential delays. I mean, he mentioned that a lot of this has to do with supply chain issues and the pandemic, things that are outside of the T's control, which, moving forward, who knows what else may come up that's outside of the T's control. And this is a situation where they're, waiving penalties in this case with this contract. So will that happen again if there are some more things that come up outside of the T's control that would push you know, delay these, you know, train cars even further.
Joan, you've had some interesting back and forth with the general manager over the last year, sort of, you know, through your column and in one-on-one. What were you listening for, and did you hear it today?
Well, my main takeaway, I think, is, you know, as he comes to this one-year anniversary, is the power of communication and visibility. There's actually a general manager who talks to the public through the media, and that's a change from what we're used to. And I think that makes a difference for the T, because it's given him a cushion. It's given him, I think, some credibility with the public. You know, that's my impression. They've also gotten more adept at pairing good news with bad news. The bad news being the contract extension, the $146 million, and the fact that it's now going to take to 2027 to deliver those cars, with good news about the low fare program and what's happening on Blue Hill Ave. They've gotten much better at doing that. And as far as what's happening with the CRRC contract, that didn't happen on Phil Eng's watch. That contract goes all the way back, I think, to 2013 or 2014. 2014, right? We haven't really, you know, sort of addressed the underlying issues there. Was it a mistake to go with the low bid contract? Was oversight lacking all those years? How much is the contract extension about keeping union jobs alive in Springfield? I mean, I think there are lots of, you know, really policy questions that come out of this. And also, the really good question of, just what does this mean to riders, and what does this mean to the system overall?
Zeninjor, it did strike me when he started talking about low-income fares that this, I won't say it was personal to Phil Eng, but he cares about making sure that this low-income fare program happened. It wasn't just a, I'm okay with it. It's a, I asked to make sure that it happened.
Yeah, you know, and I think in many ways that's a reflection of actually listening to a lot of transit advocates have been pushing hard for this low-income fare program for many, many years. I've been at the last few MBTA board meetings, and they're all there with their T-shirts on. There's one group in particular that's been very vocal, the Mass Senior Action Council. And, you know, there's other groups as well that have been really bringing up so many different aspects of the low-income fare program, wanting to make sure that premium service for the paratransit service, the ride, was included in this low-income fare program.
Which originally it wasn't.
Originally it wasn't. And we saw the board take that in. And right before the vote, MassDOT Secretary Monica Tibbetts-Nutt added that amendment in to make sure that that was included. The room erupted in cheers when that happened. It was a very interesting scene to watch play out. And after the vote, cheers all around the room. A lot of folks who have been coming to meetings, members of the public, all these various organizations coming to these meetings, giving testimony for so many months and years before that when, you know, this issue has come up before. And I think you see that reflected in what the MBTA has laid out for this program, and the fact that, I definitely got the sense from writers, from some of these organizations, that they felt heard, that their concerns were really taken into account.
So, Joan, this may be the last question. It's to you. It sounded to me like he was telegraphing that we could see some real changes in their controls and how they spend money, that he's diving deep on that. Was that just me, or did you feel like you heard some signaling there as well?
Well, I felt that you asked, not to be overly flattering, but you asked the key question, like, where is the money coming from?
Thank you.
Right? How much state investment is there going to be? Last November, I was just scrolling back at some of the news. He threw out a number, an incredibly large number of $24 billion, which he kind of walked back a little and said, that's a planning number. Given that we're kind of going through some tough revenue times right now, is the state going to deliver for the riders of the T? I mean, I think that's really the key question. And I'm not sure exactly what to read into his answer. I mean, he was very optimistic. I mean, I hope he's right.
And Zeninjor, just what a, and just $24 billion to keep the state, the T up into a state of good repair. Zeninjor, 30 seconds before we close, what are you watching for now?
Well, I'm watching to see, you know, what happens with a number of these projects, how the low-income fare program rolls out, how smoothly that is, the accessibility of folks being able to sign on to that, as well as the Blue Hill Avenue project, which we touched on, seeing how that plays out, particularly with this next phase of community engagement regarding the final design of that project.
All right. Zeninjor Enwemeka is WBUR senior business reporter. Joan Vanacki is Boston Globe associate editor and columnist. I was really looking forward to getting your takes. Thanks to both of you for joining us today.
Thank you.
Thank you.